gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
And that's right, everybody. Welcome back once again to another edition of the Best Seat in the House podcast. As always, I'm your host, Rob Kramer, joined by my co-host, Daniel Bobo Carlin. And Dan, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good. As you know, yesterday I was at the Brooklyn Cyclones home opener, and it was about the Mets, the single A affiliate on IA ball. And yesterday it was actually colder than it inside the stadium than it was outside the stadium, of course. For those who don't know, that of course plays a factor because it was April, and that ballpark is located in Coney Island, very close to the beach. So in April, it does, those early in their season, it does get very, very, very chilly at that stadium. I had to use the hand warmers that I did not use at the stadium series game that I had left over.
Yeah, exactly, man. And great opening night win that you were at. Nice victory for the Cyclones. Can't say things went as smoothly for our New York Rangers. We'll get into that in a second. But just in case you are tuning in right after having seen our very well received WrestleMania episode that we did as a little bonus episode on Saturday. We did that Saturday afternoon for the WrestleMania show, which was on Saturday night and on Sunday night. Two really great nights of action for the WWE. Congratulations to everybody involved there. Dan, before we get on to all the normal stuff that we usually get into, I just want to get your thoughts on WrestleMania 40. What did you think? You know, me and you spoke after night one, and you were pretty positive about it. What did you think of the whole thing, and specifically night two?
I just think they just really, I feel they really nailed it with their 40th anniversary of WrestleMania. They just nailed it. The surprises, everything from John Cena's unexpected appearance to the main event. Just everything to turn out to some of the revenge angles that kind of worked into the whole show. It was a well put on show, and in the words of the character from Regular Show, Pops Mallard, good show.
yeah, exactly. I agree with you, and I agree with Pops too. That was a definitely a very fun show. You know, you mentioned the night two surprises that they had specifically. I mean, you know, night one was great in itself. The fact that we got to see The Rock wrestle, and we got to see, Uso versus Uso was pretty big for a lot of people, even though unfortunately the match kind of fell flat in front of the live audience. But night one had its big moments, but night two, like you mentioned, Cena coming out, getting involved in the main event, The Undertaker coming out, getting involved, giving The Rock a choke slam after, the Usos came out once again and fought each other off. Solo Sikoa gets involved. So definitely, a lot of action there in that main event. And then I don't know if you got the chance to watch any of Raw on Monday, but, you know, we all kind of knew that after WrestleMania ended that the chances were better than not that The Rock was going to be leaving for a little while to, you know, go film a movie. I know he was supposed to be doing that in May. So, he came out last night during Cody's championship celebration and still let everybody know he was leaving for a little while, but planted the seeds for a Cody Rock match that, you know, we're going to be having at some point down the line. So, What do you think about that, Dan? Would you be excited at all for a Cody Rock match? Because I think that'd be a pretty cool match.
Yep, I think that. I think that's setting up to happen. Maybe, possibly, SummerSlam, maybe earlier. I just know it's going to set up for one of the pay-per-views.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, at some point, Rock is going to be wrestling Cody, and Roman's going to get his championship rematch. And then, you know, The Rock is going to be taking on Roman at some point, but we're probably still a little bit, a little ways out from that right now. But yeah, overall, good show. Glad we did our little bonus episode on that. Hope everybody enjoyed that. If you haven't seen it yet, or if you didn't even know we did it, which is a possibility, I guess, go to our YouTube and look. Most of our videos usually pop up under the video section, but this one would be under live stream. So if you do want to see it, go check it out under live stream. A lot of positive reviews on there. We appreciate everybody for checking that out. But Dan, we'll keep it rolling along here right now. And you know what? We might as well just start off with the Rangers. We were talking about them, Rangers and the Islanders last night at at UBS Arena on Long Island. The Rangers had beaten the Islanders pretty handily the first two times. They beat them 6-5 in overtime in that great comeback effort in the Stadium Series game. And then they beat them really bad on St. Patrick's Day, 5-2 at Madison Square Garden, where the Rangers just really outmuscled the Islanders that whole time. Unfortunately, it was not the case last night as the Rangers lose 4-2 to the Islanders. Rangers had a chance to clinch the division if everything broke the right way, if the Rangers won and had Boston beaten the Hurricanes in regulation. The Rangers would have clinched the division title first in 9 years. Unfortunately, neither of those things happened, as Boston would lose 4-1 to Carolina, and the Rangers end up losing to the Islanders 4-2. To delay this, they still have a 3-point lead in the division. They now only have a 1-point lead for the President's Trophy race over the Dallas Stars, but only 3 games left. Rangers got all 3 of them at home, and a chance to wrap things up here now. Dan, obviously, we got a lot to get into this game because there was a lot of controversy, specifically at the end. But what did you think about how the Rangers came out in this game? You know, they fell behind 3-0, looked like garbage in the first 10 minutes. But I thought they really picked up their game after that and were the better team on the ice in the second and third period. You know, what did you think about this tough loss last night?
Yeah, I was bummed out how they came up just short. I had that game on my headphones at the same time I was at the Cyclone game. I had the game on my headphones. I was freaking – I actually saw the game on the way back home. I was in an Uber on the way home watching that. I decided to take an Uber back home instead of taking the subway. I decided to take an Uber home. I'm watching the rest of that game. And there may have been me a couple of things yelling at my phone there. Watching it on the MSG Plus app, I was yelling at my phone, and I was really yelling at that when the Savannah Chad got that hit the Savannah Chad. What the fuck?
There's a couple of things with that that you're getting into. Like, obviously, we had the Zibanejad play where he collided with Adam Pelich. Now, you know what? Last night, I gotta say that I didn't really think that was too bad because, you know, Pelich was just kind of standing there and Zibanejad wasn't really watching where he was going and he crashed into Pelich. But after the game, Peter Laviolette came out and he was as angry as I've ever seen him. Now, let's not forget, this is a guy that's only been the Rangers coach for this 1 year, but we've been seeing Peter Laviolette coach for the last 20 years. I mean, I remember him as a young man coaching the New York Islanders 20 years ago. I remember him taking the Carolina Hurricanes to the Stanley Cup final a couple of years after that. Obviously, he's coached the Flyers to a Stanley Cup final. He's coached the Nashville Predators. So this is a guy that's been around. This is a guy that's won President's Trophies. He's been to the Cup final. He's won. This is a guy that's been around the block a few times. And to see him as angry as he was, and he specifically said – he thought that the Zibanejad injury you were just talking about was intentional by Pelich. Now, at the time, I didn't really think it was last night, but then I was listening to a podcast with Larry Brooks, the Hall of Fame New York Rangers writer from the New York Post, and he was talking about how he noticed that Pelich didn't even flinch after Zibanejad knocked into him. Now, you know, no one's saying that that Zibanejad is this insanely big monster of a guy, but Zibanejad's also not small either. So, I mean, when you look at Mika Zibanejad, he's 6'2", 202 pounds. That's a big guy. And the fact that he collided with Pelich and Pelich didn't even flinch, didn't even act like it stunned him at all, that a guy just crashed almost full speed right into him, that kind of leads to what you were saying, Dan, that that maybe it was intentional. I mean, it didn't appear to be at first, but, you know, I guess you really have to take it in consideration based off how the Rangers bench reacted, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I forgot what were the reports about that injury?
Well, actually, Coach Laviolette said after the game that Zibanejad shook it off, and by the time the game ended, Zibanejad had actually returned to the bench. So believe it or not, even after that scary collision, Mika was able to shake it off and come back to the game and finish with his teammates. But, you know, unfortunately, he did get knocked a little silly there. But I don't think it's going to affect him long term, and he should be back in the lineup on Thursday night against Philadelphia.
Yeah, so that's good news. But that could have been worse. And I just have a feeling Saturday, there's going to be some gloves coming off on Saturday.
Especially, it's gonna be Rempe time.
Yeah, especially if Rempe is in uniform that day, it's going down. Like,
yeah, what were you gonna say?
And I just have a feeling it's going down, and I definitely don't want to miss this game.
Yeah, well, and Dan, you know what? Me and you were talking about that Zibanejad hit, which, by the way, even if you're an Islander fan right now, saying, oh, you know, these guys are biased and everything, you know, that shouldn't have been anything. Ranger fans shouldn't be upset about it. Even if you could say that Pelich didn't do it unintentionally, I've seen Adam Fox get called on that exact play for interference about 3 times this season. So how the hell is that not at the very least an interference call? I'm sorry, that really bothers me. But the thing about that hit with Zibanejad is that last night in real time, that's not even the hit that pissed me off the most. And I'm sure the Rangers bench was happy to see Zibanejad return, but you know that these two hits pissed them off even more. The final minute of play, 2 awful non-calls against the Rangers in the final minute, 2 boarding calls that should have been called, one against Noah Dobson, and I forget who the other guy was, the one who hit Lafreniere. It might have also been Noah Dobson. But Dobson does the – because the Lafreniere one was borderline. It probably should have been called, but I wasn't going nuts because it was borderline. The Trocheck call was an absolute disgrace to hockey, that the Noah Dobson hit on Vincent Trocheck, where he was in a completely vulnerable position, didn't even see Dobson coming up behind him, and he gets crushed into the boards. That right between the numbers, that is textbook boarding, especially in today's hockey. The fact that that wasn't called is a complete joke. That referee should definitely be looked at, because I don't know what the hell that was about. And Trocheck went over to him. Look, Trocheck is as professional a player as we've had in the Rangers in years. That guy is, you know, the perfect professional athlete that the Rangers have on there. And for him, and he keeps his emotions in check most of the time. Yeah, he gets feisty, but you never see him berating officials. And he flipped out on whoever that official was, rightfully so, because not only was that such a dangerous hit that it should have been a 5-minute major that kicked his ass out of the game and gave look. And I'm not even saying it would have helped the Rangers win, because that second hit would have been at, what, 14 seconds left, so the Rangers would have had a 14-second power play. And look, we know how good the Rangers team is. I'm not saying they couldn't have tied it, but odds are the Rangers are probably still going to lose that game. It's just ridiculous that it's not called. And I actually saw multiple NHL personalities talking about this and called that referee's decision to not make that call a gutless non-call. And I couldn't agree more. Dan, what do you think about the absolutely ridiculous, borderline criminal hit of Vincent Trocheck by Noah Dobson?
Well, I'm glad Lafreniere and Trocheck are okay and didn't get hurt, but I am really, really upset at that referee. Like, that referee should be on the Scheiser list.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't, but the first call, you know, not going, I was sitting here and I got mad and I was like, okay, that's ridiculous. That was a non-call. But then as the game keeps playing, see, that's what happens with these officials too, when they don't do their damn job, you know, when they don't do their job, first off, the Islanders saw that they let them get away with that hit. So what are you going to do? You're going to do it again because they let you get away with it. And then nothing happens to that. So the Rangers now, you know, it's kind of like a little kid when, you know, you're in the backseat of the car and you're poking your brother or your sister just to piss them off. And as soon as they poke you back, that's the one your parents sees. So that kid gets in trouble and the other one doesn't. You know, it's like, it's almost like that. And then that kid that gets in trouble feels slighted. That's the same thing with the Rangers are right now. We feel slighted because the officials did nothing. They did nothing to punish the wrong team. They protected the wrong person. And now, just like you said, the Rangers are going to dial up Rempe time on Saturday, and that's going to be it. Now, if anything happens in that fight, just like with the Devils and everything a couple of games ago, where the Devils felt this ridiculous need to fight everyone on the Rangers, and except for Rempe, you know, they fought him and the rest of the line for some reason, which should have been another penalty, by the way, for instigating, but we'll get past that. The other thing is, you know, I don't know, Dan. I'm very, very angry at the way that game ended, and it's on the officials now if anything happens in this fight on Saturday, because you know it's going to happen. It's a whether Rempe is going after Matt Martin or whether if Rempe is going after Dobson himself, someone on the Islanders is going to have to atone for the sin that happened on Tuesday night, and it's just a shame that it's got to come to that. You know what I mean? Like, the NFL officials should have done their job, and then there'd be no need for this.
Yeah, exactly. There'd be no need for this. These dumb freaking zebras. And it's the other reason why, if I had a daughter, I would never let her date a zebra or an umpire.
Yeah, yeah. Any of those officials, they're all garbage. So, yeah, just those two non-calls absolutely put a bad taste in my mouth. But you know what, Dan? As much as it pissed me off last night to see that, I hope that this lights a fire under the Ranger under the Rangers' ass. You know, I felt like when the Rangers came out a week ago, last Monday, whatever, and ended up losing 5-2 to the Penguins, I felt like that pissed them off, and then that spurred on this recent 3-game winning streak. I feel like that loss to the Islanders is gonna piss the Rangers off again and get them playing even harder, especially against the Islanders team. I expect the Rangers to come out in a big way in that one. But now the Rangers now have three games left at on their schedule and at Madison Square Garden in the regular season. All three of the games at home, obviously. We got Thursday, which is tomorrow night when we're recording this, tonight, if you're watching this on the debut on YouTube. So it'll be Thursday night playing the Flyers. Saturday afternoon, they get the Islanders. And then Monday night, April, what is it, the 15th, tax day, Rangers and Senators in the season, regular season finale. So, you know, the Flyers have been crapping out a lot lately. The Islanders have been in a hot streak, and the Senators are kind of crappy. So I would say, Dan, with these three games all being at home against these three teams, if the Rangers win all three, they got things locked up. They're the division champions and the President's Trophy winners. And there's a good chance that even if they win two out of these three, they could probably still accomplish that same feat. Dan, what's your feelings heading into this weekend now with the President's Trophy and the division title on the line?
Oh, I feel like already I believe I heard that they win. If they win the next two, that's wrapped up. And I have a feeling they could easily win at least two of the next three games.
Well, it all depends on what the other teams do. Because obviously if the Rangers win these two, they get four points. Now that would still only take them to 112. And I know that Carolina could get to 113. So they'd still need that one extra, but either way, the Rangers are in great position right now, and they just have to just keep winning. Hey, if how many three-game winning streaks have we seen from this team all year? You know, all they got to do is bag these last three, and not to mention one more victory will set the Rangers franchise record for victories in a season, which they set 9 years ago in their last President's Trophy and division season, when they won 53 games in under Alain Vigneault in his second year on the job. Now it's going to be Peter Laviolette the chance to lock this one up. Dan, going out on a limb here, what do you think? Do you think the Rangers get it done?
I believe they get it done.
So you think that they're going to lock up the President's Trophy and the division title?
Yep, exactly. I just have a feeling they're going to.
Yeah, man, I'm with you on that. Let's keep our fingers crossed. You know, the Flyers have been crapping out lately, but they're always tough. They're always tough to play against. Same thing with the Islanders. You know, the Senators are a different story. They're like a bottom-feeding team. They're in a rebuild situation, but don't look past them also, too, because they could put up a lot of points against you in a short amount of time. But the Flyers and Islander games are both going to be tough. And, hey, that's what the Rangers got to do to lock this thing down, beat two division rivals, both teams who are, you know, either in a playoff spot like the Islanders are now or just a point or two out like the Flyers are. But the Flyers had been in a playoff spot all season. So still two playoff-worthy teams playing the Rangers right now, even though the Islanders' record still drives me crazy because the Islanders are 36-42. Let's be honest, right? On paper, they're 36-27-15. But that 15 isn't ties like it used to be in the old days. It's overtime losses. So the Islanders got 15 points for games they lost this year, which pushes them from a garbage bottom-feeding team to somehow the number three seed in the Metro, which also just goes to show you how top-heavy the East has been this year, as opposed to the West, where even the wild card teams' points are in the 90s. So, you know, the West is a little bit deeper than the East this year if the Islanders are three seed in our division at only 85 points, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it's been a little bit unexpected, but yeah, that's how it is. And I just have a feeling the Rangers got this in they got this in the bag.
I love your confidence, man. Let's hope that the Rangers can translate that to at least one more three-game winning streak in this regular season. And even if it's not all three, let's hope they win two out of three and lock this thing down. As for the other team that plays in Madison Square Garden, I'm talking about the New York Knicks. The Knicks went out last night. They played two as the Rangers and the Knicks have been playing a lot in the same day lately. Hopefully that won't be the case in the playoffs because I want to, you know, I want to be able to watch both teams. As the Knicks now and the Bulls, the Knicks beat the Bulls yesterday 128-117, and it wasn't his first game back because his first game back was against Milwaukee, and he didn't really look too good, OG, getting some playing time under his belt before the playoffs begin, but he looked like his old self against Chicago yesterday as he would play the full game. He got 24 points, and it was just really refreshing to see him out there back in that lineup. Dan, you know, if obviously we found out late last week that Julius Randle is done for the year. So that really sucks for us Knicks fans. You know, we were all really excited at the prospect of Julius rejoining the team for a potentially extended playoff run. That's not going to happen this year. He's done. But getting Mitchell Robinson back, who played about 20 minutes last night, looked pretty decent. and OG Anunoby, who's rounding back into shape now. The Knicks are starting to get a little bit more healthy. And, man, if Jalen Brunson just keeps putting up nights like he's been having lately, the Knicks are going to go real deep in the playoffs, man, because this guy just keeps pushing his MVP consideration. He dropped 45 points last night again. It seemed like him dropping 30 and 40 points a night is becoming a nightly thing for him. Dan, what do you think about Jalen Brunson's MVP candidacy?
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate consideration. And I have to say, the Knicks have, I feel the Knicks are in great shape going to playoffs. I just had a feeling OG Anunoby was going to be putting up the numbers we expected once he got going. I feel like the game before there was a little bit of rust, but once he shook that rust off, he was going to be back to where we expected. And I was right on the money with that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And right now the Knicks are 2.5 games out or ahead of the and by the way, there's 3 games left in the regular season. So they got 3 games left, and they, you know, if you look at it, they're 2.5 games clear of that play-in tournament. So if they win one more game, they'll guarantee themselves to not be in that play-in, which is a good thing. Obviously, you don't want to get stuck and dragged into that. But the Knicks legitimately could finish as high as the number 2 seed right now. The Knicks only have, the Knicks have 32 losses. Milwaukee has 31. The Knicks are right behind them. Boston obviously is the runaway Eastern Conference leader at 62-17. Who, by the way, the Knicks will be playing tomorrow night, their final road game of the season, up in Boston. So the Knicks are hoping that they can pull out a big victory there. And then after that, their final 2 games of the regular season are against our home games Friday against the Nets and Sunday against the Bulls. Been seeing a lot of the Bulls lately. 3 of the Knicks' last 10 games against the Bulls. Kind of strange, but the way that scheduling worked out. But that's the way it's going down. So Friday Nets, Sunday Bulls. Tomorrow, Thursday night, they are playing in Boston. So really, really a couple of big games here. You know, what do you think, Dan? Do you think the Knicks, let's just say the 3 seed, do you think the Knicks finish in the top 3 of the East? Because right now they still have Cleveland and Orlando edged out for that number 3 seed by a half game.
I feel they do it. I feel they get a number 3 seed and put themselves in good shape for the playoffs.
I think so, too. The Nets are garbage. The Bulls, you know, aren't that much better. And obviously, all they got to do is get through the Celtics tomorrow night, and they should be smooth sailing. The Celtics are a really good team, obviously. But, you know, that's something that I think the Celtics can, you know, maybe they'll be resting players. Who knows? Because they really have nothing to play for now. They got number 1 on lock. You know, and they don't got to worry about anything else. So very interesting stuff there. But, yeah, I do agree with you that I think the Knicks will lock themselves into one of those top 3 spots. And, well, obviously, you know, either 2 or 3. All right, so let's keep it rolling along now here, Dan. Also, we got some baseball to get into, as there's been a very interesting start to our baseball season as well. Between the Mets and the Yankees right now here in New York. We'll start off with the Mets, as they got rained out today in Atlanta. They're not going to make that game up until September. So they'll play the final game of the series tomorrow at 12:20, making this the finale of a 3-game set rather than a 4-game set like it was originally scheduled. So the Mets will add that and play a doubleheader in September. But that'll be long after the Mets are eliminated from playoff competition, so we don't have to worry about that at all. Mets rained out in Atlanta. That kind of sucks. Quintana was scheduled to make his debut, was scheduled to make his start tonight against the season debut of Alan Winans, or Winans, however you say it. That's the Atlanta's young pitcher, only making his 7th major league appearance. This will be his first of the 2024 season. So that'll be the pitching matchup tomorrow afternoon in Atlanta. And it's been an interesting first two games of the series, Dan, as the Mets and the Braves split the first two. Mets won 8-7 on Monday night and almost and they erased a four-run deficit on Monday to win that game 8-7. The Mets came back. They were down 4-0 basically immediately after Julio Teheran got lit up in his only Mets appearance, which we'll get into that in a second. That was as stupid as it sounds. And so they erased that 4-0 victory. First time in 7 years, the Mets have come back from a four-run deficit, which, by the way, really isn't that much if you think about it. So it just shows how much the Braves have dominated the Mets over the years. First time in 7 years, they've erased a four-run deficit to come back and win in Atlanta. And they almost did it again the next night as they were down 6-0, ended up losing 6-5. Late Pete Alonso, three-run shot, pulled them close. They got a little bit closer after that, but came up short after that. 6-5 was the final. You know, Dan, what are your thoughts on these first couple of interesting games between the Mets and the Braves of the year and, you know, the getaway day afternoon matchup tomorrow?
Oh, I just feel like the offense looks like they just they probably have a bit of fight in them. The big issue I feel is the pitching, especially the bullpen, especially having to use up our best relievers are getting used up too much because we haven't had any pitching that's been able to go beyond a five and fly. And it's irritating me when I see that. Like, it's like, are they going to be able to hold on to win this every time I see them go to the bullpen like this? Because it's just assuring me, and if they even expect any kind of contention, they have to pull a move at the deadline if they're anywhere near there at the deadline. And it's looking more and more that the pitching is really the weakness of this team. That's specifically the starting pitching, I feel.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be that lucky, man. I don't think – I mean, I hope I'm wrong. Look, I hope I'm 100% wrong. And if the Mets are close, they'll do the right thing and make a necessary move to keep them in competition. But, you know, just look at everything we've seen. And that's not even too – so they signed J.D. Martinez, which me and you were talking about a couple of weeks ago, and which we were both happy about. You know, I'm happy they brought in J.D. Martinez. Now we find out that he needed a cortisone shot in his back the other day. So that's going to delay him even longer coming back to the major leagues, making his Mets debut. They said he had to do the same thing last year. So to be fair, and it was around the same time, at the end of spring training, he ended up missing about 15 days because he said after he got the injection, it took him about 6 days to be able to swing a bat again. And then it took him about another week after that to get ready and get enough at bats to be able to play in the majors. That would leave us to be right around the end of the month, maybe right around NFL draft day, which, by the way, 2 weeks from today, NFL draft, which means that 2 weeks from tonight, this Wednesday night that we're doing the recording, we'll be doing our mock NFL draft. So keep a lookout for that. But I mean, what do you think about this, Dan? Now we're hearing that I wouldn't expect to see J.D. Martinez on the Mets before May 1st.
That's what I'm expecting. And I just really feel like I had a scary feeling this was going to happen the moment I realized J.D. Martinez waited this long to sign with a team. It was almost asking for this. With the circumstances with the players, and he's like, this late just did him a disservice. And I just feel it's really becoming more and more like that when you see players wait this long. And this is something that probably would have just happened in spring training or something when they're really going full on, like when it gets very intense trying to get ready for the season. And we're seeing it happen at a worst time. Like these are we could use his bat in the lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing, maybe I'm questioning the Mets about doing this. Maybe it's because they don't want to wear him out. They don't want to wear him out so much. Who knows? But I'm surprised I haven't seen Alvarez DH a bit more until JD Martinez comes back.
Whenever
Alvarez is not catching, he should. I'm surprised they don't have him DH more often. I understand. Though yesterday they were trying his hand was a bit maybe had took quite a bit of hits, so they kind of wanted to give his hand a little bit of rest. But they really should be DHing him until. On the days that he's not behind the plate until JD Martinez comes back.
Yeah, I think too that as much as Mark Vientos, I am not as high on Mark Vientos as a prospect as a lot of Met fans are. I do like him. I think he's a good young kid, but I also don't think he's going to ever be the type of guy to hit 30 and drive in 100, which is kind of what you'd want out of that type of player. But I also think that he should have been given the opportunity as soon as we broke camp and found out that, you know, JD was going to be starting in the minors, which we all, you know, understood. You know, you'd think that Mark Vientos would have been given the opportunity to DH because look, and I know he had a nice hit the other day against Atlanta, which, by the way, was his first and still only hit of the 2024 season, that being DJ Stewart, who hit the big two-run shot on Monday to put the Mets up there in the game, 7-5 late. But for me, I just don't, you know, I just don't understand why, you know, I don't know. I just don't understand that, Dan. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't understand that. You think... I was expecting Vientos was going to break camp with the team when the moment we realized that that JD Martinez wasn't going to be ready in time for the season, just totally shocked me.
Yeah, and look, I'm not saying anything, you know, negative about DJ Stewart, and I get that he's a lefty too, so maybe the Mets just wanted to have the big lefty bat on there. You know, DJ Stewart had a good run at the end of 2023. I do think he deserved a shot at some playing time this year. But right off the bat, to me, I would have much rather see Vientos get the opportunity, you know, over DJ Stewart and really a lot of the other guys that they've stuck at DH, which, by the way, if you're not going to have Vientos there, I totally agree with you even more. How do you not have Francisco Alvarez getting more at-bats in the DH role, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It just totally baffles me, this decision.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting this weekend, too, as the Mets come back from their road trip. They'll be finishing up in Atlanta on Thursday, back in New York at Citi Field on Friday for a 2015 World Series rematch against the Kansas City Royals. The Royals will be visiting the Mets this weekend. The Royals have not been a good team over the last couple of years. They do have a couple of young, exciting players like Bobby Witt Jr. on that team, a couple of other young guys who the Mets will get a chance to see. But, you know, what do you think, Dan? When you see the Royals coming back into Citi Field here, you know, obviously we're still all scarred from that 2015 World Series that – me and you saw that game four play out in Anthony's basement over there in the compound on Halloween all those years ago. You know, what are your thoughts about seeing the Royals and it conjuring up all those memories?
Yeah, it does conjure up the memories that I was disappointed only a couple of months later than what I've been in seasons past.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But at least they got there, right? At least they got to the World Series.
But how was that? I was at game three of that World Series. I was actually there at game three of that World Series, and I just remember how like shocked, and I realized this late in October, and I'm at Citi Field. Just it was kind of hard to believe that at that, but it was happening, and I got to be there for that. Also, this weekend is a major, important day in Mets history on Sunday, as Doc Gooden's number 16 will be retired, and I will be there for that, as I've been for just about every time there was a number retirement ceremony that happened since I was born. I was then, I believe, 6 years old. My mom took me to when the Tom Seaver's number was retired, and of course I was there when Mike Piazza's number was retired. I was there
Oh yeah,
when
so was I.
I was there that. And by the way, that was one of my favorite Met giveaway items. Was that? I'm sure you have that same poster. It looks like a. You still have that poster? It looked like a giant baseball card.
Yep.
I thought I thought it was a great design for a poster. And if I ever get, I know I already have a signed baseball by Mike Piazza that was given to me as a gift when I graduated high school. But I do want to get this poster that I have. I would love to one of these days maybe potentially get Mike Piazza to autograph it, because I just think it'd be a cool poster to have signed by him and framed. Because I just thought it was a neat poster design. I was also there the day Jerry Kuzman's number was retired. I was there for that, and I was there when Keith Hernandez's number was retired, and I was there when well, this one was unexpectedly, because we didn't know until the moment it happened. No Met fan knew that this was going to happen until the moment it happened. Remember Old Timers Day, the Mets retired Willie Mays's number. To a lot of surprise, to the surprise of a lot of Met fans, those present and watching that day, no one quite knew that that was going to be announced. It happened right in front of us, but I was present for that. So I've seen, so every Mets aside, so just about every time the Mets have retired a number, aside from the two that happened before I was born, of course. Of course, Gil Hodges' number was retired before I was born, and Casey Stengel's number was also retired way before I was born. But aside from that, also, I guess maybe, I guess, I
And
don't know.
Seaver was 1988.
Yeah, as I said, Seaver, I was alive for that one. As I said, a 6 years old me, I was 6 years old, and my mom took me to that game. So
Very cool. Very cool, man.
I actually still have the program from that game in my collection still.
That's cool. I actually have the program too, but it was given to me. I wasn't at the game.
But yeah, I have a program, and somewhere between the pages of it, I guess my mom grabbed these. I guess WFAN was giving these out. They were giving out these bumper stickers or something commemorating the date of it. And I have one of these back when WFAN, I think they were still, I forgot if they were already 6-6. I think that was the first year they were under the 66 AM frequency. Because I didn't realize this because I was very little then. But when I look through the pages of some Met yearbooks from the first year WFAN was in existence, WFAN was, well, they already had the broadcasting rights to the Mets at the time. But they had flipped formats to the sports talk station we know today. They were surprisingly used to be 10:50 a.m. I didn't realize until I looked. Not that many people realize that. Their frequency used to be 10:50.
I do remember that. I do remember that. Yeah, very cool.
So I have, so I have, I have, so I have these little, so I've noticed that. But yeah, I got to be there, and of course, all the number of retirements that have happened. Since I've been born, I was born in 82. All those that have happened, I got to be present for. So that was pretty neat. And I'll be there for this one, and probably when Daryl Strawberry's number is retired in June. And I actually got to say about the giveaway items, I kind of like the it's interesting design for the giveaway items they're doing. The bobblehead of it's actually the day before of Doc Gooden. Not only does the head bobble, the arm bobbles. Apparently, the Doc Gooden bobblehead they're giving out, and the Daryl Strawberry bobblehead, the base of the bobblehead looks like a baseball card, from what I saw the
Well, you
pictures
know,
of.
I don't need the bobblehead though, because I got my Darryl right here.
Yep.
And it's not really.
Yeah, you got like the little thing up there. Yeah, it's a pretty neat one. You got there. I forgot. Is that a little miniature cardboard cutout, or is that the vintage starting lineup figure? Because I have that in my
collection. No, that is. It's not the starting lineup. It is. Let's see. It's
like a little statue. It's not starting lineup or anything, but it's like a statue.
Yeah, it looks like something they were selling back in the day, it looks like. But yeah, I have that starting lineup still in the package from back in the day.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Yeah, everybody loves Daryl and Doc, so it's gonna be really cool seeing those guys get their due at Citi Field for all the greatness they've done to this organization over the years. Obviously, you know, didn't end the way we all wanted it to, but hey, they won a championship here, and for better or worse, they're a big part of Met history. Dan, before we wrap up here, I did want to wrap up with the Yankees, do a little bit of Yankee talk, as right now, by the way, Yankees are going for the sweep of the Miami Marlins at Yankee Stadium. Yankees are 10-2. Marlins are 1-11, off to one of the worst starts they've ever had. But they trail the Yankees actually trail the Marlins right now 4-0 as Jake Berger hit a 3-run shot early in this game in a 4-run third inning to put the Marlins on the board and give them an early lead. So we'll keep an eye on that score to the end of the show, which we're just about done. But I do want to talk. I mean, 10-2 start for the Yankees is phenomenal. Best start they've had in 21 years since 2003. And actually, it's tied for the best 12-game start in any year for the Yankees in their history. There's only been three other times that they've done it. And every other time that they've started 10-2, they've ended up in the World Series that year. As you can see, 1922, they went to the World Series. They actually went in 21, 22, and 23, losing 21 and 22 to the New York Giants. And then they finally won in 1923. 1949, they ended up beating the Dodgers in the World Series. And as we all remember, in 2003, they lost to the Marlins in a good World Series after probably one of, if not the best championship series of all time, the 2003 American League Championship Series against the Boston Red Sox. So,
my uncle in Florida, in Orlando, he actually drove to Miami to attend, I believe he drove to Miami to attend game three, if I'm correct. He made the trip out there from Central Florida all the way down to Miami to be at that game. From what I recall, he somehow he knew in Miami won tickets, and he went to that game, and surprisingly he ran into Mayor Bloomberg at that game.
Huh. That's pretty weird. That's pretty cool, actually, I guess, down in Florida.
Yeah, yep, of course, by the way, back then, the Mayor Bloomberg spent his own money to make that trip to Miami, because I had to applaud Mayor Bloomberg back then when he was mayor. He did a lot of things out of his own pocket. He actually had season tickets to both the Mets and the Yankees out of his own pocket back then.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. And, you know, the funny thing is you bring up going to those games in the series. I was like 15 or 16, whatever, at the time. And I was actually with my family in Disney World down in Orlando. And I expected people down there. And I mean, I know if you're down in Disney, you know, it's going to be a lot of people from a lot of different areas, not just Florida. So I remember being in the park, the Disney park, when they announced over the loudspeakers, and the Florida Marlins have just defeated the New York Yankees to capture the 2003 World Series championship. And everybody kind of like gave them a little applause and was like, that's kind of cool. So then everybody moved on. But the thing that really struck me was the next day I was with my family, my uncle, my aunt, you know, the rest of my family, my sister, my parents, out to breakfast, and I go to get one of the newspapers to read up because, you know, we're on vacation. We're not really paying that close attention. So I wanted to get the newspaper and read up on what happened in the World Series. You know, this is 2003. It's pre-smartphone, so you actually had to read the newspaper. And I was shocked when you got the back of that newspaper. It had a big fold-out matchup of the Florida State football game. It was Florida against Florida State, big-time college football down there. And then on a little sliver across the bottom, it says Marlins beat Yankees to win World Series. And I was just like, man, that's the difference between Florida and New York. They yep. are giving college football priority over their team winning the World Series.
Well, what I'm curious to what paper was that? Was that the Orlando Sentinel?
Actually, I think it was, to be honest. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was the Orlando Sentinel.
Yeah, that probably made sense for the Orlando Sentinel, even. But I probably, from what I remember, and I think one of my, I have a cousin who was born in South Florida, who's a Marlins fan. I think there was a much bigger thing at the newspapers in South Florida than there was maybe in Central Florida.
That's true, but still. You know, you're yeah, in yeah. Florida. You'd think yeah. that, you know, upstate New York is still talking about the Yankees winning a World Series like it's 5 minutes away.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's the context. There's a lot of people in Florida that are just really, really from elsewhere. So it probably was a big thing. And I probably think probably college football and probably the sport of football really caught on in Florida because I feel like they had football like the longest, like. That was probably the first really major professional sport that had a major sports of the Big Four that had a team in Florida. And I'm correct. I think the Miami Dolphins may have been the first franchise in the Big Four and, you know, NFL, MLB, NHL, NBA that had a franchise in Florida. If my history is correct. So that probably,
yeah.
So that's probably, yeah. That's probably why the Dolphins like caught on a bit more yeah. at the time. Plus that it was a bit beyond there when there was like a huge wave of people moving into Florida at the time. So it probably became a thing that was passed down from like locals, and it was because it was like and probably even more because it was the first like professional sports team that had that was based in Florida.
Well, that's true, but that's the thing down there. They, for some reason, they're big. They're not that big on professional sports, but they're real big on college sports. But, you know, there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. I mean, the Dolphins were the first professional team. You know, the Magic and the Heat didn't come around until the late 80s, the early 90s. Obviously, the Marlins didn't come around until 93. The Rays weren't until 98. So, There's a lot of truth to what you're saying, Dan. So maybe it's just you know, the taste of the people of the locals, you know.
Yeah, and probably especially college football might be a big deal there because that was really for years that was probably the closest thing to professional sports they had out there was a college football. Also, I noticed sometimes you get fans of various teams that became fans because that team was that MLB franchise had their spring training site near where they lived. Like I actually know someone who became a Mets fan because he was not far from Port St. Lucie. He grew up not far from St. Lucie and the Mets had their spring training site there. That and WOR with the Channel 9 back when the Mets were on Channel 9 for some reason used to be available on cable companies in Florida for some reason. So you had a number of people that wound up gravitating toward the Mets at the time. You had an influx of people that gravitated toward the Mets or even the Braves. And I think you may have a couple of Cubs fans because apparently when WGN had their broadcast rights to the Cubs, the WGN was available on cable systems there. So you had really those three teams kind of developed a little bit of a following in Florida because of the availability of the local broadcast that somehow showed up on the airwaves over there.
That makes sense too. I mean, I even had a friend when the Orioles used to play in Fort Lauderdale until just a couple of years ago. I had a friend from Fort Lauderdale who grew up an Orioles fan just because the Orioles played there all the year. Makes sense.
And plus back then, but the Marlins and the Rays weren't until the 90s. So prior to that, that was probably those spring training games were some locals were the first exposure they got to Major League Baseball was attending spring training games.
Very true, Dan. All right, so we're just about going to wrap up here right now. Just to close up on the Yankees, Giancarlo Stanton just hammered a bomb, but it was only a solo shot, so the Yankees now trail 4-1 against the Marlins, so keep your eye on that game. Also, after this, the Yankees will be playing this weekend. They have off on Thursday, and then they playing in Cleveland this weekend against the Guardians, so that'll be an interesting matchup. They're off to a really quick start, too, 8-3 to start the year, as the Yankees are 10-2. So, yeah, I think that's just about going to do it for us, Dan. Do you have anything that you'd like to plug before we get out of here?
Sure. You got my YouTube account. I mean, well, actually, first my Twitter account. You see right there on the screen there, Bubba103NYC. You got my Instagram account and the Treads account, Bobo718DK. Also, you got my YouTube account. It's one word, Daniel Curlin. You got all my Bobo content I put up on YouTube on there. And, of course, with my YouTube, ever since we started this whole Patreon thing, I've decided to give everybody who's subscribing to this Patreon and all of you who haven't yet, if you subscribe, you get early access to my videos on YouTube. If you subscribe to our Patreon, you guys get early access usually it would be 2 weeks ahead of when I make the videos available to the public. You get early access to those videos, and you'll probably, I think the only video on YouTube that you guys that I wouldn't get that you probably guys that's probably available to everyone at the same time is probably potential championship celebration videos. That we got to make available to the people as soon as possible.
Yeah, well, keep dreaming, buddy. maybe we'll have something for the Rangers or the Knicks, hopefully. But I'm sure it won't be the Mets. I feel pretty safe saying.
I just have a feeling that one of these two teams, the Knicks and the Rangers, we're gonna maybe one or probably even both, for all we know. It could happen, but you'll see a reaction, and I'll figure out a way for someone at Donovan's to set up the phone or have the cameras on us when that moment happens.
No doubt about it.
Us celebrating in a crowd of people that'll be packing that bar that night for sure.
Exactly, and don't forget, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in and checking out the show again tonight. If you're on Patreon, you're watching this live right now. If you're not on Patreon, you could be watching this live. So what are you doing? It's only $5. You get everything Dan just mentioned. You get to watch the shows for free early. And, you get everything else just for $5. So we appreciate all the help. Yeah, what are you going to say, Dan?
Yep, exactly. That's a cost of the equivalent of the cost of a Metro card. You get all that for $5. You won't, and even the cost of a five pack of Arizona iced teas, $5 is a good deal.
Exactly. So make sure you do yourself a favor and check that out. Tell anybody that you know that's a fan of the show. Only $5 gets you in. We appreciate all the support there. Don't forget BSith_podcast on Twitter. My last name Kramer NY also, and don't forget on Instagram at Best Eat in the House Podcast. If you're on Kick, we're on there, Best Seat in the House Podcast. If you're on Twitch, we're also on there, Best Seat in the House Pod. So make sure to check us out. We appreciate all the support from everybody. And, that's going to do it for us, Dan. So for Rob Kramer and Daniel Bobo Curlin, we'll catch you next week, everybody, on the Best Seat in the House Podcast.